It's no secret that the demographics of western Wisconsin have been in transition over the past several decades. While European Americans continue to be in a large majority in our region, we've seen growth in other ethnicities, with the fastest growth coming among Latin Americans. But what is it like to live in this region when you have Hispanic heritage? Today on the West Side, we'll spend the hour with two prominent Eau Claire residents who were recently named among Wisconsin's most powerful Latinos by the online publication Madison 365. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Good to have you with us today. Our guests are Gerardo Lacone. He is a historian serving as assistant professor of Latin American studies at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire. He also served for 4 years as president of the advocacy group El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley. Gerardo Lacone, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Catherine Emanuel is the area director for the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Extension for Chippewa, Dunn, and Eau Claire counties, and also currently serves as vice president of the Eau Claire City Council. Catherine Emanuel, good to have you along.
Good morning.
As always, you're invited to join the conversation. Join us with your comments, questions, thoughts, stories at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. First, congratulations to both of you for being recognized as two of Wisconsin's most powerful Latinos. How does it feel to be on that list? And we'll start with you, Gerardo Lacone.
It was a surprise. I had no idea that I was going to be on that list. And to be honest, I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the term the most powerful. Mm-hmm. But I like their explanation about people who are making a change in their community and trying to are influential in that way. And in that sense, I can relate.
Catherine Emanuel, was your placement on that list of powerful Wisconsin Latinos a surprise to you?
It was a surprise. In fact, I started getting messages of congratulations before I even had a context. And in my household, we had a very friendly laugh about it, as I have a two-year-old who does not view his mother as most powerful. So the list doesn't make a difference for him. However, I would share my colleague's perspective of having influence. And that's another way we look at power, yeah, is having influence, being able to help shape and mold and hopefully bring people along. And I think that's pretty evident in our personal and professional commitment here in our community.
Give the two-year-old another 30 years and they'll think you're more powerful than you are. Before we dive more deeply into life as a Hispanic person in western Wisconsin, let's get a little more background from the two of you. Catherine Emanuel, what brought you to western Wisconsin?
Yeah, so I moved here when I was 19 years old. I've now lived here for over half of my life. And it was a really interesting full circle because my great-grandmother came from Guanajuato, Mexico, came to Kansas, and then came to St. Paul. Mm. And that's where my grandmother was born. And my great-grandma became a single parent at a young age in her early 30s and then moved to California because the cost of living was better. And that's where my grandma moved. And then that's how I ended up being from California. And so to be able to be back here, not too far from where my grandmother was born, is pretty special. And I think a lot about just some of the things have changed and haven't changed over the years. My great-grandmother worked at a poultry factory. She was working on the line, plucking the feathers manually, mm-hmm, which we don't have that process anymore manually. But we do see a large influx of immigrants when there is ever a meat manufacturing. And so my family is certainly a part of that. And what I think about here in our community is all the people who must have invested in my great-grandma's life and my family's life, and now with the ability to help shape and mold in our communities, how can I help? How can I help pay that forward?
Talk about your position with Extension and your responsibilities there.
Yeah, so the Division of Extension is now part of UW-Madison, and we really pride ourselves on being part of this Wisconsin idea to bring research and knowledge from a traditional campus out into the community. And so our job is to work with everybody in the community who we can serve, whether that's with agriculture, economic development, civic engagement, food, health, wellness, working with families, to really help them create the lives that they want and help them thrive. And so we bring best practices through our campuses or other Extension campuses to help people live the most meaningful lives possibly.
Now, part of and we'll talk about this a little later, but part of what you work with as in your position with Extension is helping people to get more engaged in government, and you kind of took that on as a personal thing. You were the first Latina to win a seat on the Eau Claire City Council. Was that designation of first Latina significant for you?
It was in my... To me, it was important. I think to some people who have seen me grow, I think that was really important. I actually had a former Extension family educator who also had a significant role in helping start El Centro, who really took me under her wings. And I think a lot of people did see that as significance of helping to see a citizen grow in their power and their advocacy around a community. And I think... Sometimes I don't know how ready our community is, even when we see small successes. I don't know that our community knows how to reconcile that just yet. And that's okay, because we're all growing, myself included. And I think what's really important is that we find ways to continue engaging people and bringing people along, because our community succeeds when everybody succeeds. And that's what we need to be committed to.
We're talking about life as a Hispanic person in Western Wisconsin. The voice you just heard was Catherine Emanuel, and our other guest today is Gerardo Lacone. And so, Gerardo Lacone, please share your background story and what brought you to this community.
Background. So I was raised in California, Los Angeles, California. And my parents are immigrants to the United States from Mexico. And I was born in L.A., like I mentioned. I came to Eau Claire in 2010 because of work, my position at the university.
And talk about that position, if you would, a little bit. You are involved with the Latin American Studies program at UW-Eau Claire. What are some of the courses you and your colleagues in the colleagues in the program teach?
Sure. I teach primarily three classes for the program of Latin American Studies at UW-Eau Claire. It is Introduction to Latin American Studies, U.S. Latino History and Culture, and Music and Dance of Latin America. Hmm. And then occasionally I'll teach classes for the History Department as well.
Sure. What are the objectives of the Latin American Studies program?
The program is designed to help students be critical thinkers and learn all the ways in which Latin America is important to the United States and to in a world context, as well as Latinos in the United States with their lives in the United States. So critical thinking and awareness of both Latin America and the Latinx community in the U.S.
Can you identify any preconceived notions about Latinx culture students have when coming into your classes for the first time?
For example, in the Introduction to Latin American Studies course, one of the first things I have them watch and that we discuss is there's a TED Talk about the single story, about how the first thing that comes to our mind about any place, whether it be in Latin America or in this example, it is an example about an African country. And then I have students do presentations. And so one of the very first discussions we have is to try to go beyond those initial first stories that come to mind when thinking about a country or a region.
Good advice for any country or region. 800-228-5615 is the number if you'd like to join our conversation, 800-228-5615. And as we launch into that conversation, let's define some terms. We've already heard in the course of this program the words Hispanic, Latin American, Latino, Latinx. Gerardo Lacone, are these terms interchangeable or do they mean different things?
They mean different things, although they have overlap. And so, for example, Hispanic is a reference in the context of Latin America. Hispanic is a country that is predominantly Spanish-speaking. And that is not the same because, for example, the largest country in Latin America is not Hispanic. Brazil speaks Portuguese, not Spanish. And then Latin American is a country south of the United States. Latino includes people who are U.S. citizens of Latin American descent. And in the context of the United States, someone can identify as Hispanic because they're referring to the fact that they're descendants of people that came from a Spanish-speaking country, but they don't have to speak Spanish themselves.
You mentioned before the show that you do full lectures on this topic, so thank you for a good capsule.
Yeah, and then Latinx,
yes,
is essentially is about the same as Latino, with the addition of trying to not fall into the Spanish language gender binary, yeah, of Latino, Latina, which is exclusionary to people who don't identify as one or the other.
Well, and Catherine and Manuel, I wanted to touch on that with you. The Spanish language is very gender-based. The term Latinx or Latinx has been coined in recent years to provide a gender-neutral description. Is it useful, or does it try to force modern political correctness onto centuries-old traditions?
I think that we have to evolve as societies and communities to get beyond, really, it has to be this or it has to be that. And in my family, we talk about that. And my daughter's 14, and she says, I know, Mom, I know that there's a lot of sexism and lots of languages. So she understands, and we talk about this. And then you see her light up and get really excited of, oh, Mom, I saw this. This doesn't make sense, or this is wrong. And so I think it's really important that we have a responsibility with our language to include people and to welcome them. A lot of times when you're newer in a community, whether you've been here for 10 years or 20 years or 6 months, you might not feel welcomed. And so I think it's all of our responsibility to put out that welcome mat. And sometimes it starts with the words that we choose.
Our topic is Latinos in the Chippewa Valley. We're speaking with Catherine Emanuel and Gerardo Lacon. And they're both Eau Claire residents who have positions of leadership and were recently named to a list of Wisconsin's most powerful Latinos. We'd love to hear your comments. We'd love to hear your stories and questions. 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615 is your opportunity to join the conversation. I'm Dean Kallenbach. You're listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network. Our conversation this morning is about Latinos in Western Wisconsin. And Catherine Emanuel, 5 years ago, Extension did a study called Latinos in Wisconsin, a statistical overview, very comprehensive. And among other things, the study tracked the Latinx populations here in Western Wisconsin. How have those findings of that study informed your work?
Yeah, great question. So before I took on the role as a director for the three counties, I served as an educator, and I was based out of Trempealeau County, which is just about an hour south, or 47 minutes from my driveway, if you want to be precise. And when I was first hired, there was a priority that I needed to do, which was to provide programming to Latino families in the county. And I felt after a needs assessment that I was at a crossroads. Either I would develop regular curriculum from Extension and have it translated into Spanish, or I could create something that was really unique and needed to the community. And what I felt was most needed was to help not just give people knowledge, is to give them power to then build their own knowledge and advocacy in their community. So we started a leadership program called The Art of Leadership, and I used demographic information to really literally drill down to where might I find the highest concentration of people in a community. And I went door to door, and I spoke in my Spanglish and talked about how people invested with my great grandma and helped her and my family. And now it's my time to help out as a teacher in the community. And we were hoping for just a couple people who were Spanish speaking in a program of 12. We capped out at 19 people, and we only had 2 people who identified as Caucasian in our program. So it was very successful program. And we did a pre and post evaluation. And the first class that we had people take a mask and kind of illustrate with art what does leadership look like to them? Where does their power live? And then we had them make a mask at the end, and we had comparison. So we use this as an evaluation tool. And the very end class, we had people drawing butterflies and freedoms of expression of how much more freer I feel as an individual. And really, it was maybe things that people might take for granted of knowing how does Robert's Rules work if you go to a meeting? How do you get involved at your school? How do you help mitigate through challenges for volunteers and boards and committees that you might serve on? And so trying to give people these skills to be effective in their community rather than just saying, well, here's a program that's in Spanish, and then people can help advocate for themselves. So now we use that information really across Wisconsin. We see that we had one of the largest increases in Latinos in Wisconsin from the last census information, which was 2000 to 2010. We'll see the next chunk when we have 2010 to 2020. But here in Western Wisconsin, we see that we had an increase. This is a rate of growth for the last 10 years. In Chippewa County was 177%. Eau Claire County was 105%. Dunn County was 87%. Trempealeau County was the fifth largest in the United States at 595%.
Yeah. I mean, sixfold what it had been 10 years earlier.
Off the charts.
And so, and Trempealeau County, and for those who may not be aware of the geography of Western Wisconsin, it's a large county with a lot of small communities dotting it. So door to door was quite an adventure, I'm guessing. You did a lot of driving those weeks.
Did a lot of driving and a lot of walking with my little tote bag, and I'm sure my knuckles were a little sore from the door knocking, but it was worth it because when people understood what we were doing, they said, thank you for caring about us. Did a lot of outreach as well in other places in the community, and that was hopefully the home run, is to actually personally go to somebody's home and invite them. What I would say is that when we look at the increase, really, we've got this interstate or this Highway 93 that goes right from Trempealeau County to the very southern part of Eau Claire County. And we see a lot more concentration of businesses on the south side of Eau Claire, which I think is a real handy connection for people who may be coming to just get their grocery items or to work at their place of business. And then it goes right down to the heart of Trempealeau County, which is in Arcadia and has many, many Mexican-owned businesses and Latino-owned businesses.
What drew these people? What caused that increase to the sixfold increase over 10 years?
So this is my personal and professional opinion. I'm not a demographer. I should say that at first. You know, we have research that Extension's Applied Population Laboratory has helped to be a part of that indicates that anytime there's meat manufacturing in a community, there will be a higher concentration of immigration population. So we can look just north at Barron County at the Janio Turkey Factory. Yeah. We see that here near in Trempealeau County as well. And then you have similar types of manufacturers. So Ashley Furniture is literally down the street from Golden Plump. Yeah. And then you have a lot of agriculture. So a lot of times people think, well, if it's just ag, then you're going to have immigrant workers. And that's not true. It's really the high influx of meat manufacturing that causes the explanation for that.
Gerardo Lacon, the same study shows that about a quarter of Latinos living in Wisconsin lived in poverty in 2010. Why is that? And do we think that number will have moved when the next census is taken next year?
Latinos in the United States in general, you know, have a lower, tend to be on the lower economic scale for a variety of reasons, from being recent immigrants in some cases, to simply coming from lower income urban areas. But yes, the immigrants are very successful, and Latino immigrants in particular, very successful at coming out of poverty. By they're more successful than the average citizen at climbing the economic ladder. And so, yes, I do believe those numbers will decline. with the population being here longer. And when there's an opportunity, I also wanted to talk a little bit about the history of Latinos to the Midwest and Wisconsin.
Sure. Let's do that next. But first, let's hear, by the way, your number to join the conversation, 800-228-5615. We're talking about Latinos in the Chippewa Valley, 800-228-5615. And we have heard from Christina in Glenwood City. Christina, thanks for joining the West Side. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you. I'm delighted to speak to you. I've wondered about this question for all of my 60-plus years. My father was born in Guadalajara and came to the United States, married my mother, who was from Illinois. She is Irish and English, and I have never known what I should refer to myself as. I don't want to discount either one of them. Can you advise me?
You can. Catherine Emanuel, why don't you give it a shot?
Sure, I'll take it. So, Christina, we could be cousins. So I'm half Mexican and I'm half Irish, and I do consider myself Latina. And there are many of my professional colleagues who share this identity as well. I didn't grow up very close to my Irish side of the family, who lived mostly in Europe. I knew some cousins, but I did not have the closeness that I had with my Mexican side of the family. And so I very strongly identify with that side of my family. And I think we have wide arms in our community. So it's hard, I think, at times to kind of live in a bicultural world where you're not enough on one side or you're too much on the other. There's a great scene in the movie Selena that really speaks to that. And I've often felt that way, you know, that you don't belong here and you don't belong there. And I'm turning 40 soon. So, Christina, I know you've got some more life wisdom than I do. And I've really personally been thinking about this. We all belong here. And so regardless if I've been here for 6 months or if I'm 51% or 49%, this or that, we all belong here. And I think it's just fine if you want to call yourself Latina.
So the vote is not either or, but both.
Both.
Did that help, Christina?
Thank you. I have an identity.
Well, if we did nothing else today, we created an identity for Christina. So thank you for joining us. 800-228-5615 is the number for you to call. I want to shift to what you were talking about earlier, Gerardo Lacone, that and just jump into it. I didn't write down exactly what you wanted to talk about, but please go to it.
Just that, yes, there is a Latinx population that has been growing almost exponentially the last decade, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't a Latinx population already here and that's been here for decades and in some cases almost a century. So There have been people from Mexico and Mexican Americans from Texas that have been coming to the Midwest, including Wisconsin, since the 1910s, and that is primarily in agriculture, migrant farm labor, but also people that went to the factories back when Detroit was more industrial and when the economy was more industrial, getting factory jobs as well. And then that led to people settling and moving here. Then the numbers of migrant farm laborers from Mexico and from Texas really grew in the 1950s and has continued since. In Wisconsin, I believe cherries, cucumbers, canning, as well as other vegetables, are the ones that they've been coming in the tens of thousands as migrant work in Wisconsin for decades. And there's a lot of people here, similar to Christina, who just called in, that, you know, those relatively small numbers of people that have been coming here for decades, they're here. You know, they may, you know, a lot of them may no longer speak Spanish or, you know, their grandparent was Latino and then no one since. But But they're here, and they've been here for at least many decades.
Low prices, oversupply are resulting in the closing of many dairy farms in Wisconsin. Do you think that factor makes Western Wisconsin maybe less attractive for dairy workers from Mexico, or just there would be less opportunity?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I think about at least 40% of dairy workers in Wisconsin and 70% in agriculture across the United States are immigrant and majority Latino. Mm-hmm. Your question, is it going to make it less attractive? Well, certainly, but that may also mean that they will make up a larger percentage of the workers that are doing the work, because ultimately, I believe that's the number one reason why the Latinx population came here in the first place and has been growing, is because of job opportunities.
Yeah, work is the driver.
Yeah.
That extension study came about through a deep dive into census data. The 2020 census, just around the corner. PBS reported this year concerns about the risks of undercounting for Latinx and Black populations, among others. Catherine Emanuel, do you share that concern?
Well, I'll certainly let the census speak for themselves. I wouldn't take a position on that in my extension work. But what I think is really important is that we have an accuracy, because that does help to influence how we can best serve the community. And I know that we want to do that through meaningful education with our communities. You know, here in the University of Wisconsin-Madison Division of Extension, we have a Latino task force that we started about a year ago that we are looking to really build some partnerships across the state. And so I think for us to open up our vantage point and our viewpoints from ourselves as being focused in education to see, okay, community partners such as El Centro or Jonah here locally to El Centro Hispano in the southern part of the state and other partner organizations, say, where are our blind spots and how can we help bring meaningful education and research to people. So whether it's on the dairy farms, whether it's in the classroom, whether that's getting youth involved, whether that's teaching food and nutrition, we want to make sure that whoever is living in our communities that we're able to serve them, and having accurate information from the census certainly will make that work more meaningful.
The Trump administration has asked for a question to be on the census relating to citizenship. Gerardo Lacon, does that affect the confidence that Latino populations in Western Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country might have in taking part in the census?
The immigrants and low-income people have been undercounted in past censuses. And so then, if without an explicit effort to make sure to include them in more accurately, they will be undercounted again. In addition to that, the current context, political context under the Trump administration, has certainly led many in the immigrant community in particular, among Latinos, to err on the side of caution. And the fact that he's even talking about the census at all will also lead toward people erring on the side of caution and not participating.
So creating something of a chilling effect.
Yes.
In recent years, the Trump administration, of course, has called for stricter enforcement of immigration laws. Last July, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, better known as ICE, conducted a raid in Arcadia, which is in Trempealeau County, and ICE detained 15 people. Now, Arcadia has one of the largest Latinx populations in our region. How might an ICE raid or the threat of one alter the dynamics of a community like Arcadia? Catherine Emanuel, do you have some? I realize that's not part of your scope anymore, but obviously it's right next door.
Yeah. Well, I think anything that destabilizes families is hard, regardless of your family. You know, when we look at children of all backgrounds, one thing that we're really concerned with is the adverse childhood experiences. Excuse me. And so certainly having destabilization, such as parents being separated, does cause some of that. And so I think what's really important for our work in Extension is to work with our community partners to be a resource, whether that's helping build that resilience. You know, while there are many adverse things that happen in our communities, I think what Gerardo has talked about is that resilience, and that that is important that we continue to build that.
We're talking on the topic of Latinos in the Chippewa Valley, what it's like, what some of the challenges are for living in Western Wisconsin, what some of the joys are as well, we hope. 800-228-5615 is your number to join us. Our guests are Catherine Emanuel. She's the area director for the UW Extension, UW-Madison Division of Extension for Chippewa, Dunn, and Eau Claire counties. And we're also speaking with Gerardo Lacone, who is an assistant professor of Latin American Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. We would love to have you join us in the conversation and ask your question or tell your story. 800-228-5615 is your opportunity to do that. I'm Dean Kallenbeck, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. Our conversation today is about Latinos in the Chippewa Valley, two people who have recently been named among Wisconsin's most powerful Latinos by Madison 365. Online publication, are with us today. They're both Eau Claire residents, Gerardo Lacone and Catherine Emanuel. And again, we'd like to have you join the conversation if you wish, 800-228-5615. I want to talk a little bit about some of the challenges for Latinos living in Western Wisconsin. Language is obviously something that comes to mind if you are coming directly from a Spanish-speaking population. How is that dealt with? For one thing, I'm interested what Extension's work is in that, Catherine Emanuel. But we can all imagine that language is a if you don't speak the language in the community you're living in, that's going to be a challenge, the primary language. What are some things we might not think about, those of us who are English speakers who, you know, grew up in this area?
Yeah, great question. So Extension, we exist in partnership with county government, and so I do want to thank our local counties here in this area, specifically Chippewa, Dunn, and Eau Claire counties, who see the value in having the university here in our communities. And so what we do is when we're working with folks, number one, anybody who might have a language access need, whether we're anticipating or not, we have a way to help. So we actually carry around with us little cards that we can call in if we need any translation help on the spot or an interpretation, depending on the method that we're communicating in. Other things that we can do is that we can have our colleagues come up from Madison who are skilled in this work on the language access program. So sometimes we'll have similar to what I'm wearing right now, which is a pair of headsets, where we'll have learners wearing headsets and we'll have somebody translating or interpreting right on the spot. And then also we'll have curriculum or teaching that's developed just for one type of language. So one example that I have is we have done some work. We teach all over the community, so this is not just one example, or this is one example. We have programming that was done and created locally by an ag educator who is now one of our dairy specialists here at the state and a program manager. That's Mark Hagedorn. He created material on skid steer loader safety and then also was working with farmers and made sure that this programming was available in Spanish. Because a lot of the part that we talked about with our workforce or immigrants is our workforce. And so making sure that our employees have the resources that they need to not only do their job, but also to be safe and hopefully go home to their loved ones or be safe at the end of each day.
Interesting. Yeah. Safety instructions. That's not something I would have jumped to my mind as a primary. Gerardo Lacone, when you and I talked in advance of the program, you had mentioned that driver's licenses is actually a pretty big challenge for a number of people, a number of Latino people living in Western Wisconsin. Talk about that, if you would.
Absolutely. It's been I've been here for 9 years. And during that time, that has been the one issue that has come up the most consistently, is immigrants, regardless of residency status, used to be able to get driver's licenses and state IDs. And about the last 10 years or so, they were, even if they already had one, they haven't been able to renew it. And then others haven't been able to get one. And it would be one thing if the majority of the workforce was in an urban setting with good public transportation, or if we were in a part of the country where the weather allows more walking or biking. But they're not. They're a large percentage of them are working in rural areas that don't have access to public transportation. And we're also in a part of the country that not only might they not be familiar with, but once they are familiar with it, they learn, you know, you can't bike or walk long distances year round.
The restriction of driver's licenses to documented citizens is really what we're talking about here. And so I guess a question that I have that, you know, is there, the desire is that the undocumented residents would become citizens or become documented residents. Is that too much of a hurdle for many of these people, or what's getting in the way of taking that step to get you in a position where you can have a driver's license?
Yes, for many of them, there is no way for them to be able to become legal residents. There's even so many, you know, there's so many assumptions about our immigration laws, and it's not just about them applying or even about them applying and then waiting their turn. A lot of times there is no way for them to be able to apply to do so. And then even for the ones for which there is a way for them to apply, say, for example, there's lots of undocumented immigrants who start a family, marry and start a family with a local U.S. citizen in Wisconsin, and they'll continue to live for a long time as undocumented because our immigration system requires them to leave the country indefinitely, typically from anywhere from 6 months to a year and a half to 2 years. But if that person is the primary breadwinner for the family and they have, you know, spouse and children, it is, you know, who's willing to leave their family in that precarious situation for an indefinite period of time? And so there's a lot of people for whom there is a way for them to become legal residents, but our system is not set up in a way that makes it possible for most people to be able to realistically jump those hurdles.
Is Catherine Emanuel, in your work with Extension, is this a challenge that you've encountered, especially during your time in Trempealeau County?
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, I'd work with families who would, you know, just, I think, vacillate around just the practical implications of not having a driver's license. So what happens if you need to take your kid to the clinic because they're sick, or what happens when you need to bring your kids to or from soccer practice after school and the public school bus doesn't run after hours? So I think there's just kind of parenting and just in general is pretty demanding, let alone the challenges with the limited transportation. At the time, although I don't work there anymore, there was really an interest around informal interest about what would happen if employers would provide some type of circulator system or a ride system where people wouldn't have to worry about that, or some type of ride share. You know, we didn't ever implement or really advance that, but just really trying to brainstorm around that. And I see here in Eau Claire, we do have some employers who will provide transportation and a lunch to go to and from certain job sites within the region. And so I think this idea of transportation is not just a precarious situation. It's also everyday implications, especially when you live where it's cold, it's not practical to be walking or riding your bike. And so it's definitely something that families wrestle with.
I want to talk about the group El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley. This group's been around for a while. Gerardo Lacone, you were in a leadership role with them until fairly recently. Talk about what the group is and what it's there for, if you would.
Sure. El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley is a nonprofit organization based out of Eau Claire that started in 2010. And by the way, Catherine Emanuel was also on the board in the past in a leadership position. And this organization focuses on creating the best relationship possible between the growing Latinx community and everyone else in the Chippewa Valley, and then also does just simply advocates for the growing Latinx community and helps individuals with whatever it is they need help.
It's a broad mission. I mean, yes. that what you just described could mean many, many things.
Yeah.
Are there particular areas in which El Centro does, you know, a majority of its work, or what are some of the key things that we're talking about here?
In terms of community building and building the best relationship possible, one of the programs that has been running the longest consistently is called Habla en la Cabra. Let's talk at the goat. And it's a free opportunity every Thursday, 5 to 7 at the Goat Coffee Shop in Eau Claire, on Water Street, for people to just show up and practice speaking Spanish. And then there's also, native Spanish speakers who show up and want to practice improving their English. And so it's community building, it's improving communication, it's building networks. And so that's one example. And that's been running for, I don't know, about 6 years consistently.
So it's informal. It's not a class setting. It's just some people getting together at a coffee house and having conversations.
And there's people of all different speaking levels, and they've had students or participants as young as middle school and all the way to college students, which tend to make up the majority, and then seniors. So a wide variety of age levels and speaking abilities that feel comfortable participating.
Catherine Emanuel, how important is like a nonprofit group that's not part of government, that's not part of the university? You know, is that a role that that needs to be played in communities who have populations of Latino heritage?
Absolutely. I think when we think about resilience, a big part of that is having hope. And what I see in El Centro is that it's a safe place that a lot of people turn to. Sometimes it's, I need help with, a difficult situation coming up, and I just need somebody to be with me, to maybe a request for language assistance, to maybe there's a speaking request because an organization wants to learn more. And so I think having a safe place to go that's, as you indicated, not necessarily government, it's not necessarily an institution, it's a group of dedicated, caring community leaders who want to see people do well. And so I think that's really important that we have that, because even though we have a lot of challenges, I think what helps us as in the human condition is that we have hope and we encourage each other. And it's really part of this bigger family. And so I know that I've appreciated the bigger family that our community has meant to me when I didn't live very close to my family, which, by the way, my family has now since moved from California to the Eau Claire area. My grandma's a big listener. So hi, Grandma. And for those who don't have their grandparents or their parents with them, it's really important to have their other family. And so actually, Gerardo and I, for a long time, we didn't have a family nearby, and we've been friends for a long time, and definitely would say is part of my extended family. And I feel a deep sense of gratitude for our community and community leaders who have stepped in as that family role.
How critical that, you know, that family connection. But how critical to this organization are the non-Hispanic people who are participating in it, Gerardo Lacon?
Absolutely. So the organization is completely volunteer-run and currently has about 300 people that volunteer with the organization. And I'd say a majority are people who do not identify as Latinx. And so they're absolutely essential. And, so people approach us with a wide variety of topics, things that we're not professionals in. You know, they might have an immigration question, a department in motor vehicles question, a medical question, you know, a wide variety of things. And we're not experts on everything, so we turn to our volunteers to see, is there anyone who's knowledgeable in this particular area who can lend insight and advice to, you know, these people that approach us with a wide for a wide variety of reasons.
The what initiatives right now are is El Centro de Conexión de Chippewa Valley working on? Are there new things that we're looking at or work yet to be done to see progress in the Chippewa Valley? Gerardo?
Lately, well, a caveat is that I'm no longer the president since
right.
last year,
right.
And I'm no longer on the board since early this summer. So I don't know exactly. yeah, I'm still a volunteer with them, but I'm not on the board, so I don't know exactly what they're planning at the moment. But because of the current context and the fact that people approach us with questions regarding ICE and what to do and how to respond and what their rights are and that sort of thing, there has been a lot of effort in that area of simply helping the public be aware of what their rights are and simply so that they can act within the law, but also, you know, protect themselves within the law.
We're in the last couple of minutes, and I want to wrap up with this question, which is a big question, and we probably can't answer it in 2 minutes. But how do we, as a society, learn to talk about race and ethnicity in constructive ways? Catherine Emmanuel, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, such a good question. I think a sense of generous diplomacy has been a phrase running through my mind for many reasons, and just thinking about there's a lot of things that can get us upset and perhaps outraged at times that maybe seem like they don't make sense or they're not right. And to take a step back and take a big breath to think about, okay, we're in the long run for positive working relationships with one another in our community. And so the more generous diplomacy we can share with others, hopefully that will be given to us. And then I think just keeping the pedal to the metal on advancing our conversations. So looking at, you know, Extension, we've got this Latino task force, and we are working with partners around Western Wisconsin and all of Wisconsin. So we've got retired pastor Dave Anderson and Joyce Anderson, who are a part of that officially. And so making sure that we have our voice in Western Wisconsin part of this larger conversation to help lift more people up in our state.
Gerardo, your thoughts on that question. How do we have these conversations? What's key?
Along the lines of Catherine, another way of putting it is to give people the benefit of the doubt, and that it's not racist to talk about race. And so then it shouldn't be a topic that we avoid, but one that we discuss with an open mind and an open heart.
Thank you to our guests today, Gerardo Lacone. He is an assistant professor of Latin American Studies at UW-Eau Claire. Catherine Emmanuel, the area director for UW-Madison's Division of Extension in Chippewa, Dunn, and Eau Claire counties. Thanks to both of you for being here today.
Thank you
so much.
Catherine Thomas produced today's show. Thanks to Kate Spranger for publicity. Is there news beyond social media? That's the title of a panel discussion tomorrow night at Grace Lutheran Church. Liz Domes, digital journalist here at Wisconsin Public Radio in Eau Claire, will be joined on the panel by Gary Johnson of the Eau Claire Leader Telegram, Tom Giffey of Volume 1, Dan Schillinger at TV18. You'll have your chance for input as well. Free event tomorrow night at Grace Lutheran Church. You can find more on our website. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and you've been listening to The West Side on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.